Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, good evening, good afternoon to all my blessed beloveds out there in Radio Land. It's Sunday night. It's April 20th. And here in the States, we are celebrating Easter, and some people are celebrating the Great Feast, and some people are celebrating evidently it is a holiday, folks. I learned it this morning as well. 420, yes, the holiday of cannabis. And it is, there was another one, I couldn't remember. There was about 14 holidays for being celebrated today, and I apologize if I've forgotten one or missed one for you. But I do want to say happy Passover, happy Easter, and happy, just happy day. I'm hoping that you were able to share moments with your friends and family and some hugs and barbecues and whatever made today special for you. I'm grateful, and I can tell you today was special for me because it was actually sunny out. It was gorgeous. And as you know, Chloe and I are moving. We're moving into a temporary space before our major move south, 1,500 miles south. Yep, that's a long move. So we are liquidating all large furniture pieces because we don't need them. And so that's been kind of exciting. And finding things that we forgot that we had, also exciting. Painting, cleaning, packing, purging, all of that wonderful stuff. It's been an incredible couple of days getting all of that done and preparing for this huge move. It is a vacation for Chloe. And if you follow me on Facebook, that's facebook.com/celiacroads, you will know that I lost my eardrums the other night when I reminded her that this week is school vacation. The squeals of joy and glee were phenomenal, and I think people in China are still hearing them. Not too sure, though. Tonight, I am privileged to have Dr. Janice Fletcher. She's an author, speaker, and trainer. She specializes in Katie Byron, which my life coach in Wattring also utilizes Katie Byron's work. She has written a book, Wisdom from the Inner Teacher, Turning Ahas into Owl Moments. And being quite a huge fan of owls and turtles, I'm dying to hear how we turn an aha into an owl. Owl always a representation of wisdom. So I'm looking forward to pulling her on. And as you know, Living and Thriving, we have 1,000 million people that want to be on the show. Actually, that's a little bit of an exaggeration. It's over 500 people, but, you know, you get my point. As we grow and get bigger and bigger, more people want to be on the show, and I'm super grateful for that. However, sponsorship would really, 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 really help keep this show going. If it were my perfect moment, we'd be doing this 6 days a week. However, this is what it is. It's Sunday night and Wednesday night, and this is a year and a half of this show. We went from 5 people, which happened to be my peeps, my homies, my posse, to over 200,000 people internationally. Shut the front door. Can you believe it? Grateful to you for listening. Grateful for all of the emails and all of the love. I do have to also mention that Brian Benson, who is an author, actor, and fabulous guy. He was on the show a couple of weeks ago. And I have an announcement. Yes, we have an announcement. And I'm not going to tell you today. I'm going to wait. But you're going to have to sign up for not only the newsletter, but also facebook.com/celiacroads. Tune in, because this announcement's a really, really super big announcement, and we're both very excited. But we might tell you in about a week, maybe two. Anyway, so as I tease you just a little bit in my taunting, fabulous way, I'm going to pull in Dr. Janice Fletcher. Good morning,
Hello.
Good evening, good afternoon to you, Ms. Fletcher. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Thank you for having you on my show, or having me on your show. Appreciate it.
Oh, you want to co-host? Well, happy Easter and happy Passover and all of that. I'm not sure what you celebrate.
Thank you. Back to you. Same to you. Beautiful day
Thank
here
in Where are you located?
Charlotte.
Charlotte, North Carolina. Oh, wow. Yeah, I heard it was beautiful down there right now.
Uh-huh. Just gorgeous.
Very nice. Yep. We went from 81 degrees on, I think it was Thursday, to 32 degrees on Friday with snow and ice, and I think we managed 50 degrees today. So we're coming up in the world. I hear your weather's twice that.
Yeah. That's great. It's always good to have good weather, especially on Easter.
Exactly. So, Dr. Fletcher, why don't you give us an idea of who you are and what you do?
Well, I'm an educator by trade. I am most known for being a principal. I was a principal for 10 years. And in that role, I received the Nationally Distinguished Principal for the state of Georgia. And then I went on to live in Grand Cayman Islands, and I became a consultant and enjoyed that work very much and worked with schools and so on and so forth. And then I continued working with some of the charter schools, kids' schools in the United States, and worked with some leadership groups for superintendents, a number of different roles. And then a few years ago, I wrote this book in 2012, and so I primarily speak and train and do workshops on this particular topic, but I also do have any kind of topic available because the concept of the aha moment can fits into any topic anywhere. So it is applied into leadership workshops and keynotes and so on. So, and now I'm beginning another book. But anyway, so we're here to talk about this book, and I'm grateful to have the opportunity. Nothing makes me happier than being able to speak about optimal wisdom learning.
Absolutely, and don't be shy. It's very laid back here on Living and Thriving. We like to just have a conversation, learn about each other. So you gave us a little peek of a new book. What's the new book?
The new book is, the working title is Teaching with Spirit, and it is going to focus on the teacher's personal journey on how to embrace spirit and their spiritual beliefs, whatever they may be, as they serve in the classroom.
Oh, very cool. It's very juicy, and I'm sitting at the edge of my seat. I have so many questions, but unfortunately, I was able to stalk you on the internet, and not everybody has, so we have to take A, B, C, D, and I'm already for X.
Yeah.
So when you were a child, did you say, aha, I'm going to grow up and be a teacher?
Well, I actually did, but then I didn't, but then I came back to it. There are many teachers that used to play teacher growing up. You know, they have such a positive experience somewhere in their teaching world or learning that they come back to it. Either that or it's very negative. But one way or another, there's usually one teacher somewhere that turned them around. So I thought about being a teacher then, but then I went away from it. And then I remember telling my mother, when I was about 16 or 17, that I wanted to be an author and write a book. And I remember her looking at me like, parents can do when their children say the incredulous, like, oh, yeah, sure, but it's supporting me and so on. But that thought did come out, and then it went away through my whole career. You know, I never, I had glimpses of it. I think I might write a book one day or so on. But then, you know, when the time is right, then it's time to do so. And I did, and here I am. And, you know, I haven't even begun to spread the real message of the OWL about this aha moment book, The Wisdom from the Inner Teacher, but yet I'm being led to write yet this other book. So it's the same topic, only a little bit different. So I'm excited about that as well.
When did you start? And I can tell you, and just to back it up a little bit for everybody that's listening, I think we plant seeds. I consider myself a farmer. I'm not a teacher. I'm not a coach. I'm not a mother. I'm not an ex-wife. I'm not a girlfriend. I'm just a farmer. And what I do is I go around planting seeds, and I nurture it, and I move on. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of positive thinking and a lot of really good leadership and coaching skills come from more of the farming mentality versus this what we've traditionally known as more of a dictatorship. You're going to do this. You will. You are. You know, those types of terms that we've grown accustomed to using. when did you really tap into that whole intuitive place where you're like, oh, I'm more of a farmer mentality versus kind of this, I'm going to tell you what to do. I'm going to lead you into doing something. You know what I mean? Am I being clear?
Yes, I was, as an administrator, as a teacher and a principal, I was very much that way. However, I always had my spiritual life and my professional life quite separate. I kept them quite separate and never integrated the two, so I thought.
Right.
But I actually was, but I didn't know that I really was. So then at the end of my principaling career, I had all the teachers together from the school in which we opened it together, and it was such a special place. And I thought, you should know who I really am now that I'm leading you, you know, and now that we've spent these 7 years together. And so I had gathered them together to have my coming out party of my spiritual nature, if you will. And they actually just looked at me like I was insane. Like they said, we've known this all along. That's why we hired with you. You know, we knew that you believed the way that you believe, and so that's why we're here. And so it was sort of anticlimactic. But anyway, what happened is that there was no longer there was no longer a separation between my spiritual world and my worldly work, and it just became so integrated. And this book is the culmination of that. It is the manifestation of the complete integration of both sides of me and supporting each other, both sides of my professional work and my spiritual work support each other. And then from that comes this message of the actual aha moment, because the aha moment is the moment of learning, and it is also the moment of intuition. And so there you go. That's now my mission in life, is to have people listen within and to be very, very intuitive about everything, so that their life then becomes much easier to live. And so whether it be in the classroom or in life in general, listening within and listening to that inner teacher is our guidepost. And so that's my mission. So
What I find really interesting, for most people, Dr. Fletcher, it is a cataclysmic change. Like, I've almost died 3 times. I've been shot at. I was told I had 72 hours to live without having an additional surgery. Like, just really dramatic stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And those were pivotal aha moments in my life. And God is really a genuinely generous individual.
mm-hmm.
To give me such large lessons to learn. I call them the cosmic 2x4s. But those were the aha moments in which I had pivotal change. And for the majority of individuals on the planet, it takes a cataclysmic moment to really innately look at the situation and internalize and externalize what's going on in their life in order to not only understand it or try to understand it, to deal with it, but then to make the appropriate changes. So you didn't have anything that was really powerful that knocked you on your fanny, so to speak, like the rest of us?
Well, I agree with you. And when I go through the 6 steps of the aha moment, the process, mm-hmm. you'll see how that fits with exactly what you're saying. And that process then can be very, very large or can be very, very subtle. I'll talk about that as well. And for me, the biggest turning moment was in my life was when I found my spiritual path when I was 16. And so that really shifted me completely onto me leaving a life of service and of spirit rather than a worldly life or a worldly perspective. And out of all of the different shifts and changes that have taken place in my life, that would be the most important one. And that, of course, is the most aha, you know, because it's like, no, this world is my world that I'm going to live in this life is going to be filled with a different perspective than what I've been living with. And that happened when I was 16. So now I'm 60. So I've had a long life of living this perspective of my spiritual world with lots of shifts and changes, you know, that have brought me to this point, of course. But I should probably go through the 6 steps, and then you'll see more clearly what I mean about or where that fits into the to what you've experienced, the very big ahas.
We'll get to that in 1 second. I just want one more question to kind of tee up the wisdom from the inner teacher. What was your inspiration to actually write this book? You've been a teacher, you've been a principal, you've had this fabulous, and I personally am extraordinarily jealous, hanging out on the Cayman Islands. I mean, that's a tough life. It had to have been really hard.
I know. It's
great. Lots of shoveling, though.
Yeah. Well, there's a part in my book where there's many stories about my life and so on in the book, and I refer to my Cayman Island times many different times within the book, and one of them was when I went from my type A personality of being this highly achieved principal educator and so on at the top of my game, and then just shifted and went to the island and sat there with my golden retriever on the dock going, now what? You know, they don't care that I'm Dr. Fletcher. You know, and I went through enormous life changes, you know, as I'd learned to scuba dive and slow down with the turtles and so on and so forth. Yeah, so that was a pivotal time of my life as well. Everything is pivotal, though, you know.
Oh, absolutely. But when you had that moment, I have really, this last year and a half, I've purposely and intentionally, I have sticky notes that say slow down. Relax, you know, you'll get there, but breathe in the process, because I'm very much type A and driven, almost to a fault. But in your particular circumstance, I can only imagine that there was like this tearing almost at your soul, because you have this one ability that you've, or this one skill set that you've constantly had, you know, up until that moment, this is all that you've known, because this is what you've done, your process, your habit. And now all of a sudden it's like, sorry, it's time to mellow out, man. Let's chill. And that's hard.
Oh, especially when you live on an island. Yeah, when you're living on an island, it is that. You know, everybody has the dream about, I'm going to go live on an island and it'll be paradise and all my problems will be solved. Well, living on an island is a whole different experience, and, you know, we would watch people come and go, and, you know, it usually took about 6 months, and then they would meet their target or their, you know, movie theater or whatever it was, because, you know, it's very hard to shift. You have to shift yourself entirely and completely. What happened to me is that I kept on being type A personality for almost 2 years, and I became the first, you know, the fastest achieving dive master ever had been, I think, you know, because it's like, you have to take how many courses? Okay, and I boom, 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 boom. And literally after 50 dives, I think it was, there was this turtle. And I went over to swim with the turtle. And when I was swimming with the turtle, I had to slow down in order to stay with the turtle, because I had been zooming through the first 50 dives so fast that I wasn't even seeing anything. Once I slowed down to the speed of the turtle, then all of a sudden I could see everything. Like, oh my goodness, look at all these beautiful things around the turtle and all the, you know, different other fish and the other things that I was just zooming by to get the next dive master, you know, certification. So it took about 2 years to literally slow down, and an island, you know, an island mentality that had the icon of a turtle with a lame leg, no less. So it was, you know, a very conscious decision to go there, but it wasn't easy, you know. But by the time I was ready to leave, I couldn't adjust back. I came back and I had a big corporate job with a school system to support my husband, who was a writer as well, and he wanted a chance to write and so on. And I literally, in 6 weeks, had pneumonia, and, you know, 2 years had an autoimmune. It was just like a caged animal after that it wasn't working. So I had to adjust again, you know, to my new circumstances to be able to thrive where we're planted, right? Because that's the ultimate. To not just living in paradise, being able to live anywhere and thrive. So, yeah.
Well, and what I find interesting, and I'd like to dig a little further, because there's a lot of individuals that listen to this show from all over the world. So I have people who, you know, gently, lovingly tease me in their own ways and wit in regards to being way too tight and way too high energy, intense, you know, go-getter type, and that I should just mellow and lay back and relax. And then I have other individuals who are like, you're too mellow. You need to, you know, you're never going to please anybody. you only need to please yourself is the message at the end of the day, especially when you're that kind of personality. But what was it like? I mean, it must have been like shell shock for you, not only to be on the island, but to finally get into a groove, because A-types are habitual creatures. We are, once we get into a habit, we're really, really happy in that habit.
Right.
And then to change that habit, to develop a new habit, it takes us a while. It's not that we're, you know, we have a low IQ or whatever. It's just our makeup. It's our personality because we're so driven. And then having to go back into the corporate world, which is fabulous and wonderful, and it is, it serves its purpose. But what were the steps that you took to try to find some form of balance? Because it almost sounds like, you know, it's like dating the bad guy, getting out of the bad guy relationship, only to go back to the bad guy. You know what I mean?
Right.
So you have that break in between to find yourself, and then all of a sudden you're back with the bad guy. So it's that piece. But how did you find balance in the corporate world that allowed you to let your husband write and pay the bills?
Yeah. Because you're so international, it may be of interest that I go to India once a year also, and that serves a great deal of that balance that comes in. I just returned back from my annual trip, and so I'm all reset, you know, at a different level and so on. But as an example of one of the many things that happened to me when I shifted back, I was, you know, because I was wearing a bathing suit all the time and never locking doors for 5 years and, you know, just living this very fun island life. And then I came back and I was working in, you know, the murder capital point of the world in Atlanta. And I had to go through 7 layers of security to get to my place that was behind bars, literally, the wall, you know, the windows are bars.
And you had to wear nylons.
it was really a dramatic shift and so on. And one of the things that I had to do was go through a very long Atlanta commute at that time, whether it be an hour, 45 minutes, or an hour and a half, depending on everything. And it was just torture for me. I would cry every day driving to work. It was just like, oh, I just can't do this. You know, I just don't want to do this. I hate doing this. And I actually knew ahead of time, you know, basically through an astrological thing or whatever, that I was going to be going through this difficult time. And but even though I knew it, I couldn't shift it. So I tried to be a good sport about it and whatever, but it was, you know, my heart just wasn't in it and so on. And then I had a shift, a spiritual shift, that allowed me to then appreciate everything that I was doing and everything that I was given and so on. And when I shifted, then that commute became a joy. You know, then it was like, I can't wait to get in my car. I can't wait to do this. I can't wait to, you know, take advantage of this particular day and so on. So the thing to remember is that it's always our perspective. Always our perspective, you know, no matter what we're in. And if we look at wherever we are at this moment in time and just remember that we're in charge of what we're feeling about it, you know, that it's not the circumstances that are around us. It's about how we are dealing with the circumstances and how we are appreciating it or not. So ultimately, we are in charge. Ultimately, we are responsible for our own experience. We want to blame that I'm in the murder capital of the world. We want to blame the Atlanta traffic and that I have to do this big job that pays money so that this can happen, and that's really hard, and that's not what I'd like to do. But that's not it at all. It was a forced, you know, I believe that there is a divine will, and we were put in different situations for particular purposes, and that particular purpose was for me to literally, I had a poster, planter, whatever, you know, to bloom where you're planted. That became like, you know, those people that have visuals or visual boards or whatever. I would look at it every day and say, this is where I'm planted right now. So it's up to me to thrive, as your show talks about. It's up to me to water myself. It's up to me to nurture myself and to take care of myself and so on. It was really a long, hard journey, you know. I mean, it took me about 2 years to get on the other side of it, you know. So for me, at least, these processes have been long. You know, it took me 2 years to come out of type A, and it took me 2 years to balance back into corporate and so on. And I don't even think that I came back completely. I think that I'm coming into it right now, actually. And I don't even think it's the book that I just wrote. I think it will be the book that I am writing that will be my full-out everything I have. You know, I think I've been, like, prepared for what's coming. So it doesn't matter that I'm not there yet. What matters is this is where I am right here and right now, and that I that it's my perspective, whether or not how I'm going to experience this moment and this time in my life. You know, we don't want to live in the future or the past. We have to live in the, it sounds so trite, you know, live in the present moment and be right here, right now. We all say that, you know, the present is the present, you know, it's the present. Right now is what we have as our gift, but it's all true. It's true. There is nothing more than right now, you know, other dreaming about the future. And
I think that, you know, you and I and individuals that tend to be in this particular world as leaders and as coaches and teachers, I think that we have this, you know, and we're going to get into your ahas because this is a perfect segue. We have our own ahas, and there are two types of people in my world, and I could be wrong, the ones that want to share that aha and kick and scream and say, oh my God, this was fabulous, even though I was shot in 15 places and I almost died and I have, you know, no arms and I'm blind and whatever happens in that adversity moment in your life. So there are those of us who want to share and say, you know what, it was totally cool, we're good, we're moving forward, and I'm here, and the reason why I went through this whatever is so that I can share with you that this is a possibility. Maybe you've gone through it. Maybe you haven't. Maybe you know somebody who has, but you don't understand it. That's why I'm here. And then there are other people who, and I was talking to somebody, I think it was on my last radio show, we were talking about individuals who just can't get up from that time, from that transition, from that, you know, issue. They just can't get up and see past that moment. So talk to me a little bit about your wisdom in regards to the definition of being in the now and the moment versus holding on to your story like a dead body that you're dragging down the street.
Well, you mentioned it earlier. It's all about patterns. You know, we're habitual people. I mean, the humanity derives and lives on pattern and habit. You know, we have our structures and patterns and so on. Our mind is a pattern. Everything is a pattern. Everything is, you know, goes around and around and around. So for me, it is all about the opposite, and that is the stillness. You know, I'm a yoga teacher as well, and so I'm always constantly going into that still moment. And when we look at the world, we see the seasons changing, and we see that, you know, the sun comes up and the sun goes down, and, you know, the menstrual cycles change. Everything is a circular. The tides go in and out. It just it constantly changes. You know, you look into the atoms of the table that's in front of you, and if you really looked at it, you'd see that the atoms are moving around. So everything in the physical plane is literally moving. And so to come into stillness, into the static position, is when you can actually get into the present moment. That's what it's all about. So being able to be present right here, right now, is, for me, experiencing what does everything at this moment smell like, taste like, hear like, you know, what does it sound like, and so on, and what is the kinesthetic experience of it, as well as what am I feeling, and so on, and being aware and intuitive. And that creates your intuition. That is one of the avenues to your intuition, is actually being aware at all times. And so when whatever circumstance comes your way, and inevitably everybody is going to have dramatic times in their life, yes, those are turning points that can be moved positively or not. And yes, most of us want to just blame everybody else and just stay where we are and go back to the same old pattern. But the opportunity is there at that moment in time to grow and to say, no, this is, you know, this has happened, but, you know, again, it sounds so trite. What is the silver lining? You know, it sounds so corny or, you know, whatever, but truly there is something to, another perspective to look at with it. And so it is, for me, a retraining of the mind, constantly retraining the mind to, for me, living in the sacred. It is about connecting to the sacred, the highest vibrational possible on Earth and keeping that as my functioning level as much as possible. And when I drop down into anger or jealousy or fear or anything else, then I realize, and being aware that I have dropped down into those things, that, you know, and there are appropriate times to be angry, and there are appropriate times to be hurt, and it's appropriate to feel your emotions as they come and go, but not to stick with them, not to have them stick within you. So we're moving through the flow, right? Like everything in the world is moving, but we are the eye of the storm. That is, the key is to become the eye of the storm and to stay as in the still point as much as possible while the world is revolving around us, recognizing the things that are coming and going, and recognizing them as an observer, watching the world go around and watching yourself live in it, and then taking the full responsibility for it, and also making everything, not as important as we think it is. You know, it's just really not, because we are only here for a short period of time, and, you know, in the next moment something else is going to change and it will be different. The sun will come out, the sun will go away, whatever will happen. And so keeping the perspective of where we fit. On one hand, we are the center of the universe. On the other hand, we're just a fleeting part of the universe. You know, to keep both of those perspectives, you know, at the same time, interestingly enough, as you move through life, and looking at life is not something that's out to get you, but it is, again, the journey. You know, it's the journey, but it's not the journey of what is it going to be or what it was. Those things build you into and bring you to the present moment. You know, I wouldn't be here with this book without all the experiences that I had prior to that. All the good and the bad, you know, have brought me right here, right now, which is the perfect place where I need to be. And so recognizing that. And for me, it is the divine plan that I fall to, that I lean on. You know, I was talking to my brother-in-law and sister-in-law today, and they're having some difficult time with their kids and so on. It's just like, wow, you know, it's so hard. And I was explaining to them that for me, when I hit my hard times, the times that I'm just hopeless and I don't know how, it's a divine plan that helps me through. But there's something greater, something bigger than me that, you know, I'm following through the whatever that plan is. And so I'm just moving along as positively as possible, staying positive. And keeping it up and keeping it happy as much as possible is the best thing that we can possibly do for ourselves. Long answer. I don't even know if I answered what you wanted.
I think you did a beautiful job. And what I love about how I host the show is it's organic and it grows the way it's supposed to grow and it does what it's supposed to do. It's just a messenger. And you happen to be the story for the night. But I do have to say that you're listening to Living and Thriving with Rusty, and I'm Rusty. I'm terrifically enthused with Dr. Janice Fletcher. She's an author, a trainer, a motivational speaker. She's all into leadership and inspiration. She's written a book, and I'm scrolling down because I keep forgetting, Wisdom from the Inner Teacher, Turning Ahas into Owl Moments. So, in a few minutes, we're going to find out where we can find more information about her, as well as what are the aha moments that can be all hoot-erific. All right, it was a pun. I had to go there. You know that. But if you want to sponsor a show or all the shows here at Living and Thriving, this would be the time and the place where you would have your ditty.
Tune in weekly to Living and Thriving with Rusty, Inspiration on Tap. Rusty explores topics related to mind, body, and soul. For more information, go to her site at rustymcdonald.com. Not McDonald like the farmer, or certainly not like the fast food. Rusty McDonald, just what the doctor ordered. Listen to Living and Thriving with Rusty, Inspiration on Tap. Tune in weekly to Living and Thriving with Rusty, life coach, radio talk show host, single mom, and blogger.
All right, so we're back here at Living and Thriving with Rusty. Bella is comfortably snuggled up on my lap, the little chicken dog that she is. Chloe is taking her shower and getting ready for bed, and Dr. Fletcher is live here on air. And if you have any questions, feel free to tune in or call in. Chat with me in the chat room. I'm all alone over here. The number to call in is 347-205 9443. And Dr. Fletcher, now is the time where you get to really share with us your wisdom from the inner teacher. So what are the six steps? Don't go too deep, because I want people to go out and buy your book, but give us a little tease, a taste, a whiff of what we can expect.
Well, it's interesting, but I usually do. I always tell people everything that's in the book, and they don't. And once they hear me, they don't really even need to buy it, because wisdom is truth, and truth is wisdom, and wisdom and truth is always free. So even though I have this book that I want people to buy and so on and so forth, it's because it's just talking about truth, it must be free. So it's sort of odd the way I... Anyway, thank you for helping me promote my book, since I don't really promote it as well myself. But anyway, the aha moment is interesting, most interesting, because it happens to every single person on the planet. It happens to all humans. And you can look at the description that I'm about to explain from a number of different lenses, whichever is most comfortable for you. You can look at it from a biological point of view, from a neuroscientific point of view, a spiritual point of view, a philosophical point of view. So it doesn't really matter. But anyway, it begins, the journey of the aha moment begins with a desire. It begins with wanting to know something. You have some information that you're seeking, a problem you're trying to solve, something you're trying to figure out. And so you begin going through your mind and thinking, what is the answer? What is the solution? What is, should I, you know, move here or move there? Where should I move? What is the best answer for the thing? And you go around and around and around and around and around in your mind trying to answer that question or figure out that problem. And so that's the desire. You will never have an aha moment unless something happens that spurs it on, starts it. And that's how it begins. Now, in the grandiose of aha moments, as you have described with your life, there will be something that will happen that will then, you know, some cataclysmic event that will begin, and through that, then these steps will happen as well. So you can follow it through that way as well. But anyway, so you're trying to figure out, you have this desire, you have this impetus that has begun it, and then there comes a time when you are really tired and you can't figure it out, you haven't been successful of finding out the answer, finding out the solution, knowing which answer is correct, and where you actually say, I give up, I don't know. And that giving up, or I don't know, leads us to the second. And the second step, if you look at it from a spiritual point of view, is the surrender. It is the surrender of giving up your, from the biological point of view, the left brain. The left brain, then the left brain, which does linear logical thinking, shuts down. And that's what happens biologically. If you're looking at it from a chasm, if you're having some catastrophe in your life, the surrender is when you actually give up, and then you say, okay, the cancer has got a positive effect, or I give up and now I can heal or whatever. But anyway, so back to the problem solving, we say, I don't know, and I give up. And so biologically, we move into the second step of the process, and we have actually surrendered. When our left mind quiets down, when we shut it off that way, because we have our left and our right brain, then the third step comes forth, and that means that our mind is filled. That means that we've become quiet. And we're no longer...
Dr. Fletcher? Hello? Well, it looks like we're having a little technical difficulties. I know she'll be dialing right in, because she was in the heat of the moment of her aha moment that she's going to be sharing with us here at Living and Thriving with Rusty. The number is 347-205-9443. And, you know, if you're a Fringe fan, you and I both know that Walter Sr. would be all over this moment.
I'm back.
But if you're not a Fringe fan, she came back because it was just like satellite problem, whatever, maybe a meteorite or something. No fun to those first time sci-fi fans.
Yeah. Sorry about that. Well, I mean, whatever.
No,
there. So I was actually, do you want me to just continue?
Actually, can you go back three sentences and then move forward?
Yes.
Thanks.
Yes. So, yeah. So the point is that we give up and our left mind quiets down and we end up in the point of surrender. And once we go through the point of surrender, then that leads us to the next step, the third step, which is stilling the mind. Because our mind gets quiet, it gets stilled when, in fact, we are no longer thinking. And our left brain will finally shut down when that happens. And in yoga, like I was explaining, it's the stilling the body, stilling the mind, and so on. So now that we have the mind stilled, then that what happens in that state is that we end up into an alpha state. And I don't know if you're aware of alpha waves or alpha states of mind, but we have theta states and so on and alpha states. And the alpha state of mind is a dreamy-like state where we're not really, we're sort of half asleep or half awake. Our left brain is not engaged. And so that is when the right brain, which Einstein refers to as the sacred gift, he says that that's a sacred gift, and the left brain is the faithful servant, because the left brain is like a computer. Everything that we put in, the linear logical thinking, can pop out and regurgitate. And
yeah, mine jumped out and left a long time ago.
Good. The right brain is where the intuition comes in and where the insight and where the truth comes in. And so the left brain has got to be shut down to be able to have that come in. So now we have the fourth step in place, because we have our desire going on. We have our question that we're asking or our problem. And then we've given up and we say, I don't know. And so we've actually surrendered, which is shut down the left brain. So then we have stilled the mind, the third step, and now we're in the point where we have to listen. And so the answer, that's when the aha happens. And that's when, oh my goodness, the answer pops in and you know exactly where you should move or who you should marry or what the answer is or what you were seeking to find. And the answer pops in then. And that is when we must listen to it. And an interesting thing about this, I know that we've all experienced those times where we didn't listen. And that's when we said, I knew I shouldn't have done that. I knew it, I knew it, I knew it. And that just means that we were not listening to the truth that came in. And so that our intuition came in and told us and we didn't. Now, on the other side of it, when those answers come in, there are a couple things about ahas that are unique. And one of the aspects is that it will always be truth and you will know it. So when those answers come in and it pops in, we don't say to ourselves, oh, well, I need to go double check that. I need to go ask Joey if that's really the right answer or not, because you know it inside and outside through every pore of your being, because it's truth and it has been spoken through you to your right brain as an intuitive thing. So that's an interesting aspect of an aha moment. The other interesting aspect of an aha moment is that you can't force it, but you can set the conditions for it. So what I ask people to do is to know thyself, like Socrates suggested. And what that means is that where is it that we are in our dreamy alpha state? Are we walking our dog? Are we taking a shower? Water seems to be a conduit. Are we half asleep, half awake? Everybody has different moments in time when this happens, but everybody has times like this. You might... And so it is up to us then, again, coming back to ourself being the one that is responsible for ourselves, to pay attention to when we have those times. Is it when we're out rowing our boat or, you know, sometime and our mind is not engaged? And if you don't know when those are happening, you can backtrack it and say, well, when an aha moment comes in, it's like, oh, well, that happened when I was in the middle of a crowd and I was laughing and joking and I wasn't even thinking about that. Because the answer will pop in when you're not expecting it. It is a gift. It is a gift from the divine, and it comes in and you can't control when it's going to come in.
And I'm going to pull you back, just hold you down for a second. Two things. Our phone numbers are almost identical, by the way. I'm just going to let you know that on a private level. I'm not even kidding. I'm looking at it. I'm like, wait, who's, oh my God. That's amazing. So I'll have to send that to you via email so that you can see the difference. Very few. I thought that was interesting. Secondly, don't you feel the reason behind the integral aha moments that we have, that brainstorming, that what you and I would call like an intuitive nudge happens when we're not engaged and focused. Because we're not engaged and we're not focused, we're genuinely relaxed, having a good time, laughing in my world, throwing spitballs at somebody or just being silly and goofy, dancing in the puddles, and all of a sudden I'm like, oh my God, I got to go in. I've got to write.
Right.
But it's we're just genuinely not engaged in that particular topic. Now, as a Southern student, one of the things that was drilled into my head out of the 23 schools I attended was it was very rote. You know, you had to do it over and over and over and over again, which I appreciate now because I forgot everything. That whole parachute thing took a little bit more than I bargained for. also, the fact that in that repetition, it actually cost me creativity. Does that make sense?
Well, we need both.
Absolutely. But the point that I was trying to drag out of you a little bit is the fact that, you know, we have this focus and we're very clear about focus, 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 focus. We do it over and over again. Practice makes perfect. We've heard that our whole lives. Mm-hmm. And that actually steers us away from that creative aha moment, I think, because we work so hard and strive so hard to be focused on that particular thought. So what are some of the steps that you would recommend as a teacher and an author and a motivational guru? You know, what would you recommend for people like, I don't know, in my age group, the 380-year range, to kind of back off of that strict focus, more play, less stringent?
Well, you're absolutely right, and you can take the examples of the Google offices. You know, decades ago, they recognized that if they were going to get innovative, creative thinking and some problem solving and innovation, that they didn't put their employees into shirts and ties and cubicles. You know, they brought in pool tables and ping pong tables and flexible schedules and so on, because we have, when we're playing is when we have the most, when the creativity comes in. Yes. So
exactly.
It's very, very important for us to do a self-diagnosis and to say, well, first of all, what we have to do is enhance what's already there. So, for instance, the epilogue of my book was written at 2:57 or something in the morning, and it was never even expected. I never even was going to have an epilogue. But it's a good example of how it happens when you're in an alpha state. So for me, I know that sometimes in the middle of the night I wake up and poof, like, you know, I've got to go right. So, but that's me. So what each person has to do is to look at their behaviors and their patterns of when it is that they're relaxing. It could be they're sitting there watching a sitcom on the couch and all of a sudden there's the answer. Okay, poof, my mind wasn't engaged. So we have to do the self-diagnosis to see, or the self-awareness to say, where is it that I'm doing this? You can, and then enhance that. Okay, give myself more showers if it's in the shower, or be aware that you have a piece of paper or something available, you know, and write it down in the middle of the night when it happens. And then even, you can't expect it, but you can put the conditions in place to make it happen. So if there is not, you know, I mean, there, if you can't figure out when it is that that happens, then try out different things, you know, then walk your dog, row your boat, you know, play ping pong, get relaxed, try it out and see when it is that you feel more creative. Some people are more creative when they're in a crowd of people thinking and talking and laughing, and some people have to be by themselves, you know, and they have to be solitude, they have to be in prayer, they have to be in church, you know, it all depends on, you know, it's 1,000,000,000 different ways. You know, it's completely individualized how it happens, which is the beauty of it. It's absolutely fun, you know, because when I teach these workshops, it's like the answers come back. Other than water seems to be, there's a lot of people in the shower or going to sleep seem to be quite common. But other than that, they're just everywhere you can imagine. But I think laughter for me is
my catalyst. I find that I'm most creative when I am in this dopamine state of hysterical. I love early morning. I love when the sun is rising. I love hearing the birds and the crispness of the air, you know, when the warmth is starting to meet the cold of the night and the fog, and you can feel like your body's starting to wake up, and just that morning laughter that you can have. Those moments in that particular time frame, I find myself the most creative because I am in such a state of bliss. It's not only environmental, but it's emotional and spiritual bliss.
Mm-hmm. Well, then that is what you would then use that time and divine, you know, plan your time around that to note that that's right. When you're going to use, you know, I mean, that's why you want to become self-aware. Some people are night owls, you know, and they whatever. So the owl thing comes in when you are become aware of it. So because then what you're doing is you're learning optimally because you know exactly what it takes for you. For some people, you need to be in a crowd. Some people, you've got themselves. So once you figure out what it is you do, and what I would ask teachers to do is to recognize this in their student and share it with the student and let the student figure out how they best learn and when their learning moments come in. And then for them to know at this point in time, because it might change in the future, but right now, right here, this is what you need, Joey. And so then you become an optimal wisdom learning because it's you're aware of it. So all my purpose is I'm not really creating anything new here. I'm bringing awareness to a process that's already in place in everyone, and I'm bringing awareness and a suggestion that we can create the conditions to allow more intuition and more aha moments to come forth. So that when we live with the truth coming in for what is the answer, then there's no doubt, there's no fear, and you're going in the right direction with whatever it is that you've asked yourself or you're trying to figure out. So that is my mission.
We have about six and three quarters of a minute left, and I know you've only gone through about four of the six steps. Is that correct?
We were to the point of listening, and then once you listen, you have to act upon. That's the next step, is to act upon it, which means that you take the information that you've done and make the decision, go in that direction or whatever. So you don't end up saying, I knew I shouldn't have done that, because you've been given a sacred gift, so use it, act upon it. Because oftentimes we hear it, we listen, but we don't act. And then finally you can test it. Because you can always test whether or not it is in fact truth. Did it turn out? It may not immediately look like it's the right answer. But, you know, down the road you'll say, wow, yeah, I was right to never marry that guy, or I was right to not take that job, or whatever it is that we were trying to figure out. And so you can test it, which is the final step. And some people need that test. You know, but once you get in really in sync with your intuition and you're getting these answers really clearly, and you're really comfortable, because the more you do it, the more you're aware of what's going on with this, you're creating, basically, literally, within biologically, there is a nerve between your left and right brain, and where you're saying practice makes perfect, well, that's true. Yes. So the more we practice this, the more we're aware of when our aha moments are happening and when our left brain, when our right brain, we're creating a superhighway versus a rickety road. And so, which means that we can have that access to the right brain much more readily. So, you know, why wouldn't we want that? You know, and all the, and it's your own personal little awareness as you move through life. It's sort of like when you buy a yellow Volkswagen, and all of a sudden you see yellow Volkswagens everywhere. Well, at this point in time,
that drove me crazy. I bought a seafoam green Camry, and I had never seen the seafoam green. I mean, it's beautiful. It's got like, it's a three-tone green. I'm all excited, like a giddy little kid. We see 15 or 20 of them a day now. I'm going, seriously?
right. So that's my point, is that so now that we've had this discussion of aha moments, everybody that's listening has a greater awareness about it. And everybody listening will be able to say, wow, okay, this is when I'm more creative. This is, wow, that's a moment that came in. That's the truth that came in. What am I doing right here, right now, that allowed that to happen? You know, and to really get to know yourself. You know, because you can be in an alpha state in the middle of a meeting. You know, you can be in the middle of, you know, you can be doing anything and be in an alpha state. So, but you just have to figure out how you do it and when, and then allow it to happen more, and have some gratitude about it, because it is a sacred truth coming through. You know, so if you're thankful for that answer, you know, that's going to lead you in the right direction, that can't hurt, right? Can't hurt.
So, and I think one of the things that we have to work on as a species, we really have gone through phases evolutionary as a species to almost prohibit belief in ourselves. We come up with psychological disorders if we hear, you know, intuition. We come up with all these fear-based notions. And for, I would say, probably about the last 150 years, we've really tried to stuff any type of creativity and spiritual awareness outside of what we're told we're supposed to have. And what's really enlightening to me, again, I'm 380 years old, so being a young pup, I'm really finding this transition. My generation is in this, on the bridge of transition in regards to acknowledging our intuition, acknowledging who we are as an individual, and learning to trust ourselves, because our parents certainly didn't. Our parents were better than our grandparents. And our children, my daughter is amazing. She's influenced by many, many different types of spiritual leaders. And, you know, if I think she will be way ahead of the curve when she gets to be my age. But I'm very grateful for the kind of work that you do, and I'm grateful that you were able to take time to explain it to us on my show, because that's what Living and Thriving is about. It's an exploration of self and what resonates with you. In about a minute and a quarter, give us one thing that you really want people to take away from today's show, and then shamelessly promote yourself.
That's hard for me to do, but anyway, I would like everybody to just self-reflect, really spend some time looking and paying attention to how you think, what's going through your brain, how positive you are, how negative you are, and when you're in your dreamy states, when your answers are coming in, and to play with it. Just play with it a little bit and remember those steps and recognize when an answer pops in. Go backwards and autopsy it and see, wow, I remember when that desire happened. I started seeking that answer, and then with it, I actually did surrender. I actually did say I'm going to table that until the next meeting, or I'm going to ask Joey or whatever I did. I gave up. And then here I am. I'm in some sort of alpha state. I didn't realize I was in an alpha state, but I am. And, you know, just so the more they self-reflect, the better they will be able to intuit. And now, yes, the commercial for Dr. Janice Fletcher is to go to my website at janicefletcher.com, which is spelled very easily. It's J-A-N-I-C-E, Fletcher, F-L-E-T-C-H-E-R.com, and you'll know more about me than you probably ever wanted to know. And please write to me. And also, you could go onto Amazon and buy the book or look at it or read the reviews. And please write a review. And I'm also available for workshops, trainings, keynotes, anything. I do all sorts of things like that. I can accommodate and become the chameleon to speak about the aha moment in whatever topic that you have. I promise I've done it. Thank you so much for allowing me to speak about optimal wisdom learning and wisdom from the inner teacher. I appreciate it.
And you know what was amazing about how you started your minute and a half was, I'm not very good at this. You did a fantastic job. You are able to speak to your truth and often what you do, so I don't ever want to hear you out of your mouth again. That's it. You're grounded.
It's about the promotion of myself that I, you know, that
it's perfect.
Perfect. Thank you.
Great job. So high five. Many blessings to you, and I'm grateful that you were able to share yourself and your story and your work with us here on Living and Thriving, and hopefully we'll have you on again in the future.
Okay, thank you. Have a great evening.
You too, my dear. Many blessings. So you heard it first, Dr. Janice Fletcher, author, speaker, trainer, goddess, guru, inspirational, leadership, motivational, and all around pretty neat, fascinating woman. I really want to dig into her mind a little deeper and not put her in the beta, but keep her in the alpha. Anyway, so on Wednesday here at Living and Thriving, I have Rief van Rij, the founder of The Daily Way Home, and I've been dying to actually talk to him. He has an extraordinary story of triumph, adversity, and you know, emotional tragedies. And so that'll be a good show here on Living and Thriving, Wednesday at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. But hey, it's Sunday night, and I want to remind you that I love you, and I think you're beautiful, and you mean the world to me. And if it wasn't for you, this journey would be awfully lonely. So keep those emails coming in. Keep those tweets tweeting away. Keep that love shining on, because with us, as a team, we're going to rock this world. Until Wednesday.
Welcome to